Hey, Slingers, do you have a strategy for debuting your book? We're going to talk to author Mary Kalihikoa about how she's doing just that. So stick around. Hey, sometimes it's hard to know where to start when you're building and growing your indie author career, and that's why I have put together something just for you. Me and my partner, Roland Denzel, have created Indie Author Blueprint. So hop over to indieauthorblueprint.com, start learning about all the ways you can build and grow your own indie author career, and we'll be right there with you all the way. See you there, indieauthorblueprint.com.
It's the Word Slinger Podcast, where story matters. Build your brand, write your book, redefine who you are. It's all about the story here. What's yours? Now, here's the guy who invented pants optional, Kevin Tomlinson, the Word Slinger.
Word Slinger.
Well, hello, all my... We'll just call you socially isolated author friends. This is Kevin Tomlinson, the Word Slinger. Thanks for tuning in for another week of the Word Slinger podcast. Lots of stuff going on this week. There's a whole bunch of big, interesting things happening. Well, I say that, and then I don't really have anything directly to report. but we've got, it's been kind of interesting over the past couple of weeks as things have developed internally at Draft to Digital, so that's been fun. If you haven't been paying attention, we've been doing these daily D2D spotlights. Eventually, this is going to go to a weekly format, but we've been building these daily spotlights that are interviews with industry influencers and insiders. And it's been really interesting to see, you know, how people react to these things. They're very popular. They're very informative. If you haven't checked those out live, you can each day right now at noon central. If you are on the Draft to Digital Facebook page, you'll see it. If you follow Draft to Digital on YouTube, if you go and subscribe on YouTube, you'll see it. So that's been a lot of fun. You can also go to d2dlive.com and you'll see a countdown. You can gain access to all the past episodes. Everything is there. So in addition to that, I've been doing some live cast stuff quite a bit. Couple of things that are really fun and interesting that are more reader-facing, because I'm trying to do more stuff that's aimed at readers. Like everything I do is aimed at authors right now. I have been running my show, The Kevin Show, not in a consistent time slot yet, just kind of picking generally like a Tuesday or Wednesday, and generally like at 2 or 3 o'clock p.m. Central Time. I'll probably pick a time and make that the slot for it, but it's kind of right now, everything's sort of up in the air because I've got a lot of stuff already on my schedule, and occasionally I have guests and they don't always have that slot open, so it's been a little bit all over the place, but consistently good. If you pop in there and check it out, there is a Facebook page now, The Kevin Show, that you can search for. And if you go to my YouTube channel, please subscribe, by the way, if you go to my YouTube channel. I'm trying to bulk up to 1,000 subscribers, and I'm at like a third of that right now. Once I hit that 1,000, I'm going to want 1 billion, so just be prepared. But if you go to youtube.com/KevinTomlinson, that's my personal YouTube channel, and I'm starting to add more content there, mostly these shows. So you can catch up on like the past... I think we're up to like 6 episodes now. The most recent one, I did a cover reveal for my newest Dan Kotler thriller. If you happen to like to read archaeological thrillers, this is going to be a good one. This is a really good, I mean, I say this about every book, but this is my best book. This is my absolute best. And it's going to be tough to top, actually, going forward from here. But if you go right now, you can pre-order that book for $2.99 on Amazon. And, it's going to be pretty amazing. So help me out there. Share that with friends and family. But I do the cover reveal in a Kevin Show live stream. And you weren't there for it, probably. But that's okay. That's okay. You can catch up now and hear me talk about... A little bit about the sort of the philosophy behind the cover design and, you know, the things that I did there. So check that out. I also, this week, in the past couple of weeks, I've been participating in something that Jim Heskett has created. And it is, what it's called, Story on the Spot. So if you are familiar with author Jim Heskett and his thrillers, it's me and him, but also Nick Thacker, good friend of the show, writing partner on occasion, and also partner on author email at authoremail.com. I don't want to say is R.A. and I don't know what name he uses, R.A. something. Man, I feel bad. I feel terrible about that, R.A. I can't remember the last name. That's terrible. Yell at me all you want. I'm sorry. But, you know, there's basically four of us on this thing, and we what happens is Jim reads a story prompt from some news item he's found, and then the three of us go round robin on story ideas based on that prompt. And then the people watching can kind of vote on their favorites. So that's that. And it is a lot of fun. So there's things like that happening out there. It's really interesting to see how this sort of content is starting to evolve. The technology has gotten more accessible and people are becoming more aware of it. That's what I think is really happening. Some of this stuff has been around for quite a while, but a lot of us were hesitant to try it out. It meant embracing some changes and things like that. But I have really taken to the live stream stuff. I'm really doing a lot of live streaming for D2D, for me personally, for, you know, with all kinds of friends online. And it's been vastly beneficial. So I'm going to see how it continues from here. Now, in today's episode, I am chatting with author Mary Kali'ikoa. And that is a Hawaiian name. Her husband is from Hawaii. That, you know, we're talking about how she is rolling out her new mystery, a new mystery novel. And one of the things I want to point out, because we kind of talk about this a little in the episode, but I wanted to call it out specifically, because one of the things that I liked about this chat was this was one of her, what I call thirds. Those, you know, how you start like a third of a novel and you walk away from it. You know, I think she actually completed the entire novel, but she had written this. She had pushed it around, trying to get some interest in it in the traditional world. Then kind of, you know, shelved it for a while she went and pursued a career, working in the legal field. Then she came back, polished it up, got a deal for it, and now she's rocking and rolling on a 3-book deal. So that's an interesting scenario. She is she's going with a traditional house instead of self-publishing, and that's going to work perfect for her. What I like is she's still taking what I consider to be a more self-publishing approach to the marketing, and that comes from the fact that she's a business owner and has. You know, she's run a business for a while, knows the importance of marketing. That has to have helped. So I think this is an inspiring story and provides some tips on strategy as well. So if you're just starting out at this stuff, you haven't gotten your first book released, even if you do have some books released, maybe you don't have really a launch strategy in place. So this would be a good place to start. So I'm not going to keep you from it any longer. Let's hop right in. I hope you're enjoying this show and all the other content I'm producing. If you go check out kevintumlinson.com, you can also find it at wordslingerpodcast.com. If that's too hard, try authorontheroad.com. That's my newest URL that allows you to go directly to my website. I also got historiccrimes.com, which is going to tie in with my thrillers. So stick around. I'm going to be talking about that stuff later, but use whatever URL is going to get you there and go check out my website. I've got a ton of stuff that I am into. A lot of it is aimed at helping authors. It is my author website aimed at my readers, but if you look up in that menu bar, it's crammed full of stuff that's actually aimed at helping authors. And you'll find, if you heard the ad spot at the beginning of this episode, Indie Author Blueprint is there. Author email is there, draft to digital is there. So lots of stuff for you as an author, so go check that out. And then, of course, let's roll right into this interview with Mary Kalikoa and all about her debuting mystery novel. So see you on the other side. Hey, everybody. Thanks for sticking around through the intro, tuning in for this week's Wordslinger podcast. And today, I'm going to get this right, Mary. I promise. I promised you before we started, I'm going to get this right. Mary Kalikoa.
Very good.
Good. All right. I every now and then I pull it off. Okay. So Mary is the author of the P.I. Kelly Pruitt Mystery Series, debuting book number one, coming May 12th, 2020. So as you listen to this, I'm going to try my best to make sure you hear it before it releases. So go pre-order it. But otherwise, just go buy the thing. What are you doing? Why are you just hanging around out there? But we're going to chat with Kelly today. So I'm sorry, Kelly. Not Kelly. Mary. I'm going to do that at least three times in this interview.
That's all right.
That's one.
One down.
One down. So welcome to the show, Mary. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, I was kind of reading through your bio. You're very interesting, actually. Mm-hmm. I don't get a lot of folks who spend a significant amount of time on what we call the Big Island, but I assume you have a family connection there.
I do. My husband is actually Hawaiian.
Yeah.
So, and he's the oldest of 10, and he has several siblings that live on the Big Island, which is why we spend a lot of time there.
Yeah, that's fun. And I think a lot of people would probably be a little envious of that, but it's old hat for you, though, I'm sure.
We've come back and forth quite a bit for about 6-7 years now.
Yeah.
We tried to, you know, in our younger years, we tried to get back home more often, but, you know, being young, raising kids and that sort of thing. So,
yeah.
More time there now.
Yeah. So now reading through your bio, it said that you spent the first 18 years of your adult life working around lawyers. That had to be, I've worked around attorneys and lawyers, the same thing, but I've worked around attorneys. Not always the most fun, but it can be very interesting. How did that influence things for you?
Well, definitely. I mean, I had been working in the legal field right out of high school, and I just always really was drawn to it. I like, you know, that justice sort of thing and the fairness sort of thing. And breaking down a case and seeing the sides of everything, the observer. I'm very much an observer, so it was really fun to do that for a living for so long.
Yeah.
So it was really cool.
Yeah. And that was that sort of the springboard. It's interesting because you had a gap. Do you want to talk a little bit about like your first writing career and your current writing career? Like why was there a gap?
Yeah. So, well, I wasn't one of those people that knew I wanted to write for a long time. It took me, I was a little bit of a late bloomer. And so I was in my late 20s when I decided to try my hand at writing my first novel.
Yeah.
And I really, you know, I had high expectations. You know, I was going to be Mary Higgins Clark Jr. You know, I had this all planned out.
Yeah.
And I wrote for 8 years and Derailed, which is being published, was actually the fourth book I ever wrote.
Okay.
But the dream started to feel a little bit hard. I wasn't getting an agent. I wasn't getting anything. And so my husband and I decided to do something different. We had always wanted to work together, so we started a company. So that's where all my creative energy went for about 15 years. I owned a couple of natural pet stores and, you know, I was really big into the, you know, customer service and, you know, retail hours or, you know, especially when you're self-employed or 12-hour days.
Right.
So, my energy was gone for writing. Fast forward, I sold the company in 2015. I'd turned 50 and I was like, wonder what that book's doing over there on that shelf. So I pulled it out and 2016 is when I really started diving into it, entered it into Pitch Wars and still didn't get an agent. Still took a lot of more editing afterwards, but 4 years to that date, I'm going to be debuting. So
excellent. I mean, better late than never, but right. I don't even know that that's all that late, really. I mean, I've known authors who spent, you know, the first 50 full years of their life just trying to write a book. So
yeah, that's right. I mean, as long as you keep going, right? I mean, that's the only time you ever fail is when you back it up and just stop.
When you stop, so. Right? Yeah. So what? I mean, so you had the book sitting there. So you've that's a big advantage, by the way. having the book already written when you start kind of polishing it and getting it back out there is, I think it's kind of handy.
It was a hot mess, but yes, it was, I mean, at least it was, you know, it was there. When I entered it into that contest, I ended up having to add about 10,000 words to it to bring it up to the right word count and add different storylines. So it was really a rough draft. It's,
yeah.
When I left it behind, but it took several edits to get it to where it is for sure now.
Now, did you, were all those edits purely you, or did your, how are you getting it published? Who's publishing?
Camel Press, actually, okay. Or Epicenter Press, yeah, is my publisher. Okay. And my editor there did a whole other set of edits, even after I thought it was ready to go, even, you know, how that goes. Yeah. They buy it, and then, like, they say, oh, we want it, and here, go make a bunch more changes.
Like, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's what's interesting about that process. You know, it's like the book isn't finished until it's actually in the reader's hand, it seems.
Exactly. Very true.
Yeah.
But, you know, you get good at it. You know, I have to say, edits don't scare me like they used to, because yeah. It's like, yeah, I think I can handle that. So.
I think that was always a hang up for me early on, especially when I had my traditional contract. It bothered me a lot, you know. Was there any sort of ego to overcome when you got that first round of edits?
Well, yeah, probably. Like, I'm human, right? So there's always going to be like, what? And especially how they're presented. Sometimes my editor would sometimes say, you know, I just really don't like this part. And I'll be like, but why did you buy the book again? But you said you liked it, right? Right. So for a second, I have to go, okay. You know, she's just trying to make it a better story. And at the end of the day, I have to say, I love all the edits that she suggested. And once I got out of my own way of that, I was able to really embrace them. And I really think the book is so much better for it. So,
yeah, that's very encouraging. You know, there are those of us who fear that, you know, interference is going to just ruin the book.
Yeah.
You're taking away our child, our baby.
Your baby. It is. And they are our babies, right? I mean, put so much sweat and tears and blood, sometimes blood, into them. I mean, it's just, yeah, it's amazing, but it's hard. Yeah. But you just have to get out of your own way if you want to be traditionally published, you know, for sure. It's just right. Part of the-
Were there any changes made by the editors that you just, I don't know, that hurt, the ones that hurt?
Well, you know, originally Kelly Pruitt was very, very snarky. She kind of had a snark to her. And we pulled that back. And sometimes I'd be like, oh, but I really like that snark comment, you know, because I have an inner snarky person in me, kind of conservative, and I'm very polite. You know, I've like years in customer service, right? You don't always know what I'm thinking, right? But yeah, so that was hard because I saw myself a little bit in that Pruitt character, and I didn't want to lose that snark. But so that was painful, but we pulled her back, and I think it's better for it. So
yeah, I think that's that probably makes it tougher when you see yourself in the character.
Yeah.
You know, if it's at all in any way, even semi-autobiographical, someone is asking you to change you now. So that's got to be really uncomfortable.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not like I hunt down killers or, you know, all of that, but, you know, definitely her personality. I think a writer just does that, right? We write what we know on some levels, or at least we want to figure out.
So. Well, yeah. We got to draw from somewhere, right?
Exactly. At least in those first drafts, right? Then we can change it up.
So are you, you wrote that draft, and then it's been an edit. So you're polishing one that was already kind of around. Are you working on the next book? You said this is one of three.
Yeah. So while I was waiting for book one to sell with my agent, you know, because it took me a little while, about a year to sell through my agent. I got busy and wrote book two, which sometimes is contrary to what people suggest, you know, but I really believed at some point Kelly would see the world, and I wanted to be ready for book two. So I actually had book two again in draft, and I actually, that just went back to my publisher yesterday morning. Yeah. So book two is actually already back there, and I'm working on book three right now.
Excellent.
Yeah.
The thing I would worry about, and maybe you've figured out a way to deal with this, and I'd be curious about this. You've written the first book, and you know you're getting edits and feedback and changes. So if you're writing the second book, wouldn't that impact things? Like, I'd worry that I'd have to basically scrap what I'd written.
It was definitely a risk. I think you do take that risk on some level. but I had only drafted the second book. So I was ready to make everything very fluid as in that second round of edits based on the first round of edits. So, or the book one edit. So there are some things that I've had to change as I've gone, but it hasn't been a huge amount. So yeah. It's okay.
Do you find it's getting easier now that you've been through the first book to kind of keep the character in line?
Yes, the character part. The plotting never gets easier.
Right.
The writing the book and making sure everything comes together and the red herrings, that just seems like it never gets easier.
Really?
Well, not yet. I'm waiting.
Not yet.
I'm hopeful.
What is it that you think is the difference there? Because characters are always what people, I always hear people complain that the characterization is hard, that the plot was the easy part and that, you know, making these characters come to life was the difficult part.
Yeah, I think because I like the puzzle and I like a twist. So just having that really solid down is what I find the most difficult.
Yeah. Well, you're crafting mysteries. So there has to be that, there has to be that puzzle there that has to be good enough to fool people, but still be solvable.
Right, exactly, and make sense. You don't want to send it out of left field, like, oh, how did that, you know? So you have to play fair with the reader, right? You have to have those red herrings in place. They have to directly relate to the case and send your PI off in a believable direction. So you know, it's a puzzle, and it's fun, but it can be very. I find it hard sometimes. I'm not one of those writers that can whip it out. I envy those people who just can turn over those books.
Yeah. Yeah.
I am not that person.
Well, how do you handle plotting? What do you use, any special tools?
Well, I'm a pantser for the most part. So I sit down with an idea and I always try to draft out the first chapter. I try to write the ending chapter so I know where I'm going.
Okay.
I spend a little bit of time writing the synopsis, the general idea of where I think it's going to go. And then I start writing. I think best on the page.
Yeah.
Once I'm in it, then I can start thinking, you know, when you're in the shower, you do all your best thinking, right? So I think my plots, I run to my office afterwards and I usually know 3 or 4 steps ahead of where I'm going. And that's about the extent of my plotting that I
have. Yeah. That's all. Other than writing the ending first, that's exactly how I write a book.
Yeah. But I think it's kind of fun.
I think so. And I'm intrigued by that because, you know, I write thrillers, which have a mystery component. But now I've been kind of kicking around writing mysteries. But I was always kind of curious, like how other mystery writers do that. You know, how they figure it out. Like I'll introduce things throughout the book and it will influence how that book will end. So the idea of writing the ending first is really strange to me.
Well, it doesn't always stick. I will tell you that. And the killer isn't always the same person. I've changed killers out several times on some things, but I can usually see the last scene and I usually know how I want the final confrontation to be. I just don't always, it's not always solid who will be in that final confrontation. I leave that open. I like to be as surprised as the reader on some levels.
Well, yeah, that's kind of the fun of doing this, right? That's absolutely why I never could understand the people who meticulously plot, you know?
Yeah.
It takes all the fun out of it.
Although they would argue that point because then they're not, you know, sometimes they don't beat their head against the wall quite as hard as we do.
Yeah. I kind of want to see somebody do like a scientific study of the difference between the plotter and the pantser. You know, I wonder if I could get funding for that.
I'd be really interested to read that article for sure.
I would. I'd volunteer as tribute. I'd go in and have them like scan my brain while I'm writing.
There you go.
Be totally up for that. So that's interesting. The ending first stuff is interesting to me. It confounds me. So you're as much of an enigma to me as the plotters, frankly. So what's your sort of writing process? Like, do you use any special software or do you write every day? Like, let's run it down. What's a typical writing day for Mary?
So I do write every day. I make it a habit. So I think part of that is the years of working in an office. I just had a routine. And so coming into my office clicks my brain a little bit into the work mode.
Yeah.
And in that, because I'm self-employed, I do get to work, you know, up for a good stream of time from probably about 8 o'clock to about 11 or so. I usually spend my time writing.
Yeah.
And that's in my office. I never really stop writing, though. I'm always making my husband sit there and listen to my plot ideas or, you know, or talking about, what do you think if I murdered somebody this way? What do you think of this or that? Or I'm doing some research in connection with some of my people that I talk to for things real. And yeah, so that's part of my process. And I do write every day, even Saturdays and Sundays. I have been trying to take Sundays off. So that I can have some balance in my life, because I can get real hyper-focused if I'm not careful.
Yeah.
So, but basically every day.
I find that when I try to take those days off, they really haunt me. Like by the end of the day, I feel like I've done something wrong and should be punished.
Yeah. You know, especially if you're a productive type, right?
Yeah.
Like for me, getting a few hundred pages on a word or words on a page is production. And that makes me feel like if I do nothing else in a day, I did that and I am happy.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And there have been those days where you know, you get up, you roll out of bed. It's a terrible day.
Yeah.
And getting 100 words on the page is a feat.
It is.
So I'll take it.
Yeah. And even if you're not writing on your book, you can be writing, like for right now, while I'm doing all of this for book one, I'm doing blog posts and I'm doing, you know, lots of different things, my newsletter. So as long as I'm productive, that to me is what I like.
That's good marketing time. That's what a lot of authors don't think about. Like the authors are always so freaked out by marketing. How do you handle marketing?
Well, well, it's really hard to teach people. Yeah, come to podcasts, write two blogs. Now, you know, I think it's hard. We're kind of trained, maybe as women especially, just not to toot our own horns. You know, we don't want to be egotistical or boastful or whatever. So I find that the most challenging in marketing. Yeah. I also have a thing about social media in the sense that I don't want to add to the noise. I think it's really noisy in social media. And I don't want to add to that. I want to have something important to say. And then, you know, sometimes you wake up and you think, I have nothing to say. I have nothing to say today. I just want to be a hermit, write my books today. And I really try to honor those days, because I think people know when you're not real and you want to be real, right? You know, I don't want to be out there just to get you to buy my book. I want you to buy the book because you have some interest in P.I. Kelly Pruitt.
Yeah.
And I will share parts of my life as I go, and I want to share that. But if I'm really not into it, I don't want to just pretend, just to get you to pay attention to me.
Right.
So, you know, so I work hard. It's sometimes that's a balance.
It is challenging. And one of the things I've had to come to is the realization that even though I don't think I have anything to say, my audience, my readers and subscribers will often disagree. Like I can share the most minuscule detail of whatever's going on in my life, and I will get 1,000 emails, you know, thanking me for letting them know about this thing and how excited they are. So don't underestimate.
Well, and I guess too, you know, feeling that is kind of universal. And so even saying it out into the void, I really just feel like doing nothing today.
Yeah.
And I think we all have that, especially right now with all the wildness going on.
Well, you're in this kind of unique position then, because you're already sort of marketing the work without the book actually existing yet, or at least not publicly. Yeah. Do you find that challenging at all?
Not really, because of the you can pre-order now. You know, I couldn't really do much before then. It was a little bit of a struggle before I had the book deal. I've been staying kind of connected and creating a connection with readers even before the book deal happened, because I think that because that's real, right? I don't want to just pop in now that I'd like you to buy, you know, it's like, I really have a thing about trying to stay authentic, you know, and connect with people on a heart level. And, you know, that's kind of my thing.
How are you, you know, this is interesting, by the way, because there are a lot of authors, I think, who listen, there are a lot of what I call will be authors who listen to this show, who are just trying to learn how to do this, you know?
Yeah.
So how do you build an audience when you don't yet have the book? Like, are you talking about the process of writing in your blog posts, or, you know, what is it that you're sharing?
Yeah, so when I was blogging originally, I spent a lot of time just talking about what it meant to write and feeling some of the frustrations around it, feeling at crossroads several times, and coming to the truth that I write because I love to write. And if you took it all away, I would still show up in my office and I would still put the words on the page because that's what I enjoy doing. And I think I talked a lot about that type of thing. And I also travel and do that. And I love to share, you know, some of that because I think connecting out in other cultures and different areas of the world is a really fun thing to do as well. So
yeah, I agree. That's, and you have a number of advantages that I think a lot of authors could be envious of and should try to replicate in some way. You know, the fact that you travel, the fact that you own a business, so you understand business, because a lot of authors come at this and they don't quite understand that it is a business. Or how do you perceive it? I don't want to make any assumptions.
Well, it's definitely a business, for sure. And I think, you know, I always try to approach every situation in a professional way and keep the emotion stuff out of it. I think that's the important thing. Yeah. That's probably what I bring from my business background. And also that feeling of always surrounding yourself with smart people. I think that's something I bring from the business background. Because there's a lot of people that know a whole lot more than I do, and you can really learn from them and also offer your own stuff up to them as well. So that's the kind of stuff, but I definitely see it as a business. And I think you have to approach it that way because the publisher certainly is, you know,
exactly
to them, and you're a partner with them.
Right. And that is an important fact. You know, if you can start speaking the same language as the publisher, then the two of you are partners. If one of you thinks the other is entitled, you know, or if one of you thinks they themselves are entitled, that's where things fall apart.
Yeah, I think that's true. In any relationship, really. I mean, you know, it's true. It always has to be a give and take.
So you, one of the things that I think, this has come up a lot. I did a little writer's summit a couple of weekends ago, and part of the discussion was about how I was sitting in with Joanna Penn. I don't know if you know her. She writes under JFA. Yeah. So she brought up the fact that she started writing under her initials, JF Penn, because of there was a sort of stigma on female writers writing in that genre, which in her case was paranormal thriller. But I think the same thing is probably occasionally true of the mystery field, the mystery world. Although seems to me like there are a lot of female mystery writers. You guys do great. Was that ever anything you thought about or considered, or,
you know? No, okay. I never considered doing that. I mean, the only thing is sometimes the Kilikoa is a little difficult.
Yeah.
And my maiden name is much easier. So I did think about that for about a second. And then I thought, no, this is who I am.
This
so
is who I'm you are. Yeah. I'm going to say, I think it's great. I think, you know, keeping that name is fantastic because it stands out, right? Like one of the things when I'm consulting with authors, you know, everyone always wants their cover to stand out or something. You don't necessarily want your cover to, quote, stand out and be different. But if you have something like an interesting name, people will latch onto that.
They will. And actually, if you go to any of the online sites, I'm the only Kilikoa with a book out. So,
exactly.
You know, I don't have a lot of competition with that. You're not going to get confused.
There you go. It's like having an interesting brand name. You know, you're sort of preloaded to be memorable.
That's right. I like it. I'll let my husband know. Hey, guess what?
Yeah. No, that's cool. So let's talk a little bit about the book itself, because we've discussed, you know, everything around it, but we haven't discussed like the actual story. So what's the sort of background for this book, Derailed?
For what the book is about? Well, the elevator pitch kind of thing is that the PI, she has buried her father and her marriage in the same year.
Okay.
And she's a single mom, and she's taking on her first case to look into the death of a young accountant who was hit by a commuter train. And then she discovers that the victim was doing more than crunching numbers. And so she's now on a crash course with her family and with the killer to keep the two kids. So, yeah.
Intriguing. That is interesting. And you're establishing the character. Why? So you said this is one of three books. Why only three books?
Well, that's what the publisher has.
Okay.
And so that's where we're at for the moment.
But you're going to change their mind. They're going to come back and say, look, we need at least six more books.
At least.
Here is $1 million.
Yes. Well, you know, the nice thing about having a series character is really you can go on forever as long as somebody's listening, right? Somebody's looking at, to buy it or to read it or whatever. But So, I mean, Kelly could go on forever. She's only 32 in the book. So she's got lots of time.
And she's novel 32, meaning she could be 32 for the next 20 years if you really wanted. Yeah,
that's true. I like to move up. My tendency is to go up about 6 months in each book. So she got some time.
I've never established the actual age of my protagonist because I wanted to be free to continue writing even once I got to like decrepit status. So. We'll just see.
Yeah.
But then you get to a point where you're like, how much action and gun, how many gunshot wounds can someone take? You know,
we really put our protags through the ringer, don't we?
Exactly. I don't envy them at all.
No, would not. I figure want to.
At some point I'll wrap up the series like in the distant future and I'll have my protagonist like, you know, stumbling around with a cane and, you know, aching from every old gunshot wound.
I've been reading some PI novels that are kind of like that because I've been judging the Seamus Awards this year for the best PI novel. And so I've been reading lots and lots of PI novels. And it is kind of fun because I'm getting to see like 10th in series or, you know, and just watching that progression. And definitely these guys are aching from those gunshot wounds. It's been kind of funny.
I think that's kind of a fun detail. Like I actually occasionally have my characters feel like a twinge from an old, you know, an old injury or something. I just had a character's shoulder get knocked, you know, popped out of socket, you know, that sort of thing from an old wound. So I think that's an interesting detail and makes it more accessible.
Realistic. I was feeling it.
That said, though, I mean, you've established a character, and you clearly have ideas for the next two books. So I'm assuming you laid all the groundwork so that you could just continue on.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. How's so the next book? Again, are you able to reveal anything, or are you going to keep that close to your vest?
Well, book two is Denied. That's the second book, and it's going to explore a little bit more of family secrets.
Okay.
You're going to get a few family secrets exposed in this book, and then the second one will give a little bit more. So lots of dad issues in the second book.
Okay. All right. So this isn't just her dealing with the cases. This is, there's going to be a lot of personal story. Oh, that's good. Yeah. Cause when you see a lot of these in mystery series, especially it's always just about the case with maybe a smattering of, you know, some domestic stuff happening and almost to the side, you know?
Yeah. A lot of who she is because of what she's living in her real life. You know, she has a deaf daughter she's raising with an ex-husband who would like to keep her safe and an ex-mother-in-law who lives right next door. So, you know, she's got a lot of stuff going on.
So. Yeah, exactly. That's the way life is. So you should include a little bit of that. So who were, I think you mentioned one, but who are some of your influences?
Yeah, Mary Higgins Clark for sure. Sue Grafton is probably one of my biggest for this particular series.
Yeah.
I love J.A. Jantz, Janet Ivanovich, Faye Kellerman. I just, all of those, you know, Patricia Cornwell, I've always been just drawn into all of that. And I couldn't really even pick one. I just love them all.
So. Yeah, I know. That's the challenge. So every now and then someone asks me who my favorite author is. And you don't ask an author who their favorite author is because it's not a single word answer. It's a list.
It is. It's, oh yeah. You should see my bookcase and my stack of to be reads. You know, I can't pass a book that's like from an author I love. I'm like, oh, well, it's going in the TBR stack right now. I'll get to it someday.
Someday. Someday will come. We'll all be able to sit and it would just be nice, right? If we could all just stay home for a month.
Yes. Yeah. Or a month or two. Yeah. Just me out.
Right. So, well, look, we are, unfortunately, we're at time, which snuck up on me. I looked down and noticed that we were coming up on the 30 minute mark. So, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you and your books, and especially this one coming out May 12th.
Yeah. Well, if you go to my website, which is marykeliikoa.com, marykeliikoa.com, I have all the links, but you can ask for it at any of your local bookstores, or I'm online with all the large retail online retailers.
Excellent. And of course, for all of you listening, you can find links to this, that website that she mentioned, and anything else that is related at wordslingerpodcast.com. And just look for this episode. Mary, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. I know you got books to write and businesses to run, so I appreciate you taking a minute.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.
I appreciate you coming on. Everybody else, right now, you are hearing the Groovy Bridge music. You may dance in place at will. And if you stick around, I'm going to say something pithy and or funny on the other side of this music. So I will see you there. Take care. Well, here we are on the other side. And as promised, something pithy and or funny. I'll come up with it. Just give me a minute. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Mary, and I hope you got something actionable and useful out of it. I know I did. There's a lot you can learn. I tend to approach everything from the perspective of the self-published author, because that's what I am. And even though I've had experience with the traditional world, the self-publishing part of my career has vastly outspanned that. And I learned so much about, you know, how this industry works and ways I can sort of leverage how it works. And I focus so much on it that I occasionally forget that there are other ways to look at this industry. So it's good to talk to people who are doing this from coming at it from a different direction. It's also good to find bridges and common ground on that stuff. Because a lot of times it's almost like there's a divide there and it's us against them. And it's no such thing. Authors should always consider other authors to be compatriots, not competitors. And this this sort of thing proves that. There's not only is there a lot we can learn, but we can help each other grow in this and give ourselves more, we'll say, strength through unity. Because that's what happens a lot of the time. The reason there's a divide is the traditional publishing industry itself has a tendency to create that divide. Like, they're the ones who want it to be a competition. They're the ones who see it as a zero-sum game. And they take actions and do things that are clearly in their own interest and not in the interest of the authors or anyone else. So, not all traditional publishers do this. There are houses out there that are very good at what they do, care a great deal about their authors and the catalog that they're managing on their behalf. But, you know, when you start seeing groups like Hachette and others, I mean, just as an example, the newest David Baldacci book that's upcoming, it's coming out in November. We are currently in May of 2020. It's coming out in November 2020. It has a very in-brand cover, except for the fact that it's just a solid color and not an image. You know, the typography and everything is the same. And it says something along the lines of, you know, cover to be revealed. And the title is like the newest, whatever series this is. I don't even remember. The newest David Baldacci book. That's the title, right? And so you're already asking his readers to buy just on the faith of his name, which is, that's a valid, you know, I mean, that's great. But now look on over to the right of the page. And the price for this book, it's like the normal retail price, $27, and the Kindle pre-order price, $15. Think about that. The book isn't there. It's not finished, is what that means. The book is still being edited. Cover doesn't exist. And the publisher is asking roughly three times the price that Amazon will allow self-published authors to to put on their books and maintain more than a 35% cut of royalty. So there's a bit of an imbalance in the industry, and I don't particularly like that Amazon enforces these arbitrary rules on the self-published authors as if we are somehow, I don't know, we're lesser. That's the way it feels. But I also am not a big fan of the way the traditional publishers are doing this kind of stuff, you know. Banking on the author's name is fine, but, you know, this this whole, like, price the ebook. By the way, did I mention the print book, the paperback book that you can pre-order is less than $15? I don't remember what the price was, but it costs less than the ebook. So you can pre-order the Kindle edition for $15 off of a $27 price tag, or you can buy the print book for less money and have it shipped to you. So just makes you want to get all stabby. Anyway, but that's the conundrum of the indie publishing world. That's one of the things that's dictates kind of how we have to operate. Some interesting news this week coming out of Apple. They're actually opening up their own direct platform that's going to make it accessible for authors to, even if you own a PC instead of a Mac, you can go directly into their platform. That kind of cuts it draft to digital just a little, but, you know, it's fine. We actually think it's a good thing for there to be just a little more of this kind of stuff out there. Anything that might start taking cuts at the power that Amazon has over the industry is going to be a good thing. So we support it. And, you know, we hope people still consider us a great resource. Apple itself has been very good about, you know, they like that we take care of the customer support, that we take care of onboarding. We help out a lot. So this move to allow people to go direct is probably just a response to people continuously asking for it. And I'm going to continue to distribute. I know this is a biased opinion, but I'm going to continue to distribute via Draft to Digital anyway, just as I do with Kobo and others, because I don't want to mess with it. I don't want to have to track sales. I don't want to have to track down anyone at Apple to solve a problem when I know I'm never going to get a hold of anybody. Have you looked at Apple support lately? Or over the past 20 years or so? It's all forums, and you can't get direct help for anything. So what am I going to do? Go to the Genius Bar and ask them to help me deal with a self-publishing problem? Anywho. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and wrap it up. I appreciate you sticking in here, and I appreciate the support everyone is giving the show. Please feel free to share links to the show online. If you go to wordslingerpodcast.com, you can find every single episode that I have published. I'm thinking about a little change to how I handle the show's distribution in the near future. We'll see how that works out. Might even make it easier for you to find and share, which would be great. Make sure you write a review, rate and rank the show on Apple. It's not iTunes anymore, I don't think, but the Apple Store, wherever you're finding podcasts, anywhere you're finding podcasts, leave me some reviews, and you know, hop on over to kevintomlinson.com to find links to everything I'm doing. You can follow my YouTube channel from there. You can follow the show from there. You can find all the author-related stuff and some books. There just happens to be a book or two on the site for sale, so go check that out. And that's going to do it for this week's Wordslinger Podcast. Thank you for tuning in. God bless each and every one of you, and I hope to see you all next time.
Wordslinger.